next week, Marley and I were back, this time without Jenny. When I suggested to her that I was probably the closest thing to an alpha dog we were going to find in our home, she gladly relinquished her brief title as Master and Commander and vowed to never show her face in public again. Before leaving the house, I flipped Marley over on his back, towered over him, and growled in my most intimidating voice, "I'm the boss! You're not the boss! I'm the boss! Got it, alpha dog?" He thumped his tail on the floor and tried to gnaw on my wrists. The night's lesson was walking on heel, one I was especially keen on mastering. I was tired of fighting Marley every step of every walk. He already had yanked Jenny off her feet once when he took off after a cat, leaving her with bloody knees. It was time he learned to trot placidly along by our sides. I wrestled him to our spot on the tarmac. Miss Dominatrix handed each of us a short length of chain with a steel ring welded to each end. These, she told us, were choker collars and would be our secret weapons for teaching our dogs to heel effortlessly at our sides. The choker chain was brilliantly simple in design. When the dog behaved and walked beside its master as it was supposed to, with slack in its lead, the chain hung limply around its neck. But if the dog lunged forward or veered off course, the chain tightened like a noose, choking the errant hound into gasping submission. It didn't take long, our instructor promised, before dogs learned to submit or die of asphyxia. Wickedly delicious, I thought. I started to slip the choker chain over Marley's head, but he saw it coming and grabbed it in his teeth. I pried his jaws open to pull it out and tried again. He grabbed it again. All the other dogs had their chains on. Everyone was waiting. I grabbed his muzzle with one hand and with the other tried to lasso the chain over his snout. He was pulling backward, trying to get his mouth open so he could attack the mysterious coiled silver snake again. I finally forced the chain over his head, and he dropped to the ground, thrashing and snapping, his paws in the air, his head jerking from side to side, until he managed to get the chain in his teeth again. I looked up at the teacher. "He likes it," I said. As instructed, I got Marley to his feet and got the chain out of his mouth. Then, as instructed, I pushed his butt down into a sit position and stood beside him, my left leg brushing his right shoulder. On the count of three, I was to say, "Marley, heel," and step off with my left, never my right, foot. If he began to wander off course, a series of minor corrections, sharp little tugs on the leash, would bring him back into line. "Class, on the count of three," Miss Dominatrix called out. "Marley, heel," I commanded. As soon as I took my first step, he took off like a fighter jet from an aircraft carrier. I yanked back hard on the leash, and he made an awful, coughing gasp as the chain tightened around his airway. He sprang back for an instant, but as soon as the chain loosened, he lunged forward again. I yanked back, and he gasped once more. We continued like this the entire length of the parking lot, Marley yanking ahead, me yanking back, each time with increasing vigor. He was coughing and panting. I was grunting and sweating. "Rein that dog in!" Miss Dominatrix yelled. I tried to with all my might, but the lesson wasn't sinking in. The instructor had the class queue up and try it again. Once again, Marley lurched his way manically across the blacktop, eyes bulging, strangling himself as he went. At the other end, Miss Dominatrix held Marley and me up to the class as an example of how not to heel a dog. "Here," she said impatiently, holding out her hand, "let me show you." I handed the leash to her, and she efficiently tugged Marley around into position, pulling up on the choker as she ordered him to sit. Sure enough, he sank back on his haunches, eagerly looking up at her. "Damn." With a smart yank of the lead, Miss Dominatrix set off with him, but almost instantly he barreled ahead as if he were pulling the lead sled in the Iditarod. The instructor corrected hard, pulling him off balance. He stumbled, wheezed, then lunged forward again. It looked like he was going to pull her arm out of its socket. I should have been embarrassed, but I felt an odd sort of satisfaction that often comes with vindication. She wasn't having any more success than I was. My classmates snickered, and I beamed with perverse pride. See? My dog is awful for everyone, not just me. Now that I wasn't the one being made the fool, I had to admit, the scene was pretty hilarious. The two of them, having reached the end of the parking lot, turned and came lurching back toward us in fits and starts, Miss Dominatrix scowling with what clearly was apoplectic rage, Marley joyous beyond words. She yanked furiously at the leash, and Marley, frothing at the mouth, yanked back harder still, clearly enjoying this excellent new tug-of-war game his teacher had called on him to demonstrate. When he caught sight of me, he hit the gas. With a near supernatural burst of adrenaline, he made a dash for me, forcing Miss Dominatrix to break into a sprint to keep from being pulled off her feet. Marley didn't stop until he slammed into me with his usual joie de vivre. Miss Dominatrix shot me a look that told me I had crossed some invisible line. Marley had made a mockery of everything she preached about dogs and discipline. He had publicly humiliated her. She handed the leash back to me, and turning to the class, as if this unfortunate little episode had never occurred, said, "Okay, class, on the count of three." When the lesson was over, she asked if I could stay after for a minute. I waited with Marley as she patiently fielded questions from other students in the class. When the last one had left, she turned to me and, in a newly conciliatory voice, said, "I think your dog is still a little young for structured obedience training." "He's a handful, isn't he?" I said, feeling a new camaraderie with her now that we'd shared the same humiliating experience. "He's simply not ready for this." It was beginning to dawn on me what she was getting at. "Are you trying to tell me he's a distraction to the other dogs? That you're... he's just too excitable. Kicking us out of class? You can always bring him back in another 6 or 8 months. So you're kicking us out." "I'll happily give you a full refund." "You're kicking us out." "Yes, I'm kicking you out." Marley, as if on cue, lifted his leg and let loose a raging stream of urine, missing his beloved instructor's foot by mere centimeters. Sometimes a man needs to get angry to get serious. First thing the next morning, I had Marley out in the backyard with me. "Nobody kicks the Grogan boys out of obedience school," I told him. "Untrainable? We'll see who's untrainable. Right?" He bounced up and down. "Can we do it, Marley?" "I can't hear you. Can we do it?" he yelped. "That's better. Now let's get to work." We started with the sit command, which I had been practicing with him since he was a small puppy, and which he already was quite good at. Next, we moved to the down command, another one I had been practicing with him. I slowly raised my hand in the air and held it there as he waited for the word. With a sharp downward motion, I snapped my fingers and pointed at the ground and said, "Down!" Marley collapsed in a heap, hitting the ground with a thud. He could not possibly have gone down with more gusto had a mortar shell just exploded behind him. Jenny, sitting on the porch with her coffee, noticed it too and yelled out, "Incoming!" After several rounds of hit the deck, I decided to move up to the next challenge, come on command. This was a tough one for Marley. The coming part was not the problem. It was waiting in place until we summoned him. I put him in the sit position, facing me, and fixed my eyes on his. As we stared at each other, I raised my palm, holding it out in front of me like a crossing guard. "Stay," I said, and took a step backward. He froze, staring anxiously, waiting for the slightest sign that he could join me. On my fourth step backward, he could take it no longer and broke free, racing up and tumbling against me. I admonished him and tried it again, and again, and again. Each time he allowed me to get a little farther away before charging. Eventually, I stood 50 feet across the yard, my palm out toward him. I could see the nervous energy building in him. He was like a volcano ready to blow. But he held fast. Okay, enough torture, I thought. I dropped my hand and yelled, "Marley, come!" As he catapulted forward, I squatted and clapped my hands to encourage him. "Come on, boy," I coached. "Come on." And come he did. He was barreling right at me. "Slow it down, boy," I said. He just kept coming. "Slow down." He had this vacant, crazed look on his face, and in the instant before impact, I realized the pilot had left the wheelhouse. It was a one-dog stampede. I had time for one final command. "Stop!" I screamed. Blam! He plowed into me without breaking stride, and I pitched backward, slamming hard to the ground. When I opened my eyes a few seconds later, he was straddling me with all four paws, lying on my chest and desperately licking my face. "How did I do, boss?" Technically speaking, he had followed orders exactly. After all, I had failed to mention anything about stopping once he got to me. Jenny peered out the kitchen window at us and shouted, "I'm off to work. When you two are done making out, don't forget to close the windows. It's supposed to rain this afternoon." I gave linebacker dog a snack, then showered and headed off to work myself. When I arrived home that night, Jenny was waiting for me at the front door, and I could tell she was upset. "Go look in the garage," she said. I opened the door into the garage, and the first thing I spotted was Marley, lying on his carpet, looking dejected. In that instant snapshot image, I could see that his snout and front paws were not right. They were dark brown, not their usual light yellow, caked in dried blood. Then my focus zoomed out, and I sucked in my breath. The garage, our indestructible bunker, was a shambles. Throw rugs were shredded, paint was clawed off the concrete walls. Worst of all, the doorway in which I stood looked like it had been attacked with a chipper shredder. Bits of wood were sprayed in a 10-foot semicircle around the door, which was gouged halfway through to the other side. The bottom 3 feet of the door jamb were missing entirely and nowhere to be found. Blood streaked the walls from where Marley had shredded his paws and muzzle. My mind flashed to poor Mrs. Niedermeyer and the chainsaw murder across the street. I felt like I was standing in the middle of a crime scene. Jenny's voice came from behind me. "When I came home for lunch, everything was fine, but I could tell it was getting ready to rain." After she was back at work, an intense storm moved through, bringing with it sheets of rain, dazzling flashes of lightning, and thunder so powerful you could almost feel it thump against your chest. When she arrived home a couple hours later, Marley, standing amid the carnage of his desperate escape attempt, was in a complete, panic-stricken lather. He was so pathetic she couldn't bring herself to yell at him. Besides, the incident was over. He would have no idea what he was being punished for. Over dinner, we tried to put what we were now calling the wilding in perspective. All we could figure was that, alone and terrified as the storm descended on the neighborhood, Marley decided his best chance at survival was to begin digging his way into the house. He was probably listening to some ancient denning instinct handed down from his ancestor, the wolf. And he pursued his goal with a zealous efficiency I wouldn't have thought possible without the aid of heavy machinery. When the dishes were done, Jenny and I went out into the garage where Marley, back to his old self, grabbed a chew toy and bounced around us, looking for a little tug-of-war action. I held him still while Jenny sponged the blood off his fur. Then he watched us, tail wagging, as we cleaned up his handiwork and made a list of materials we would need from the hardware store to repair the damage, the first of countless such repairs I would end up making over the course of his life. Marley seemed positively ebullient to have us out there lending a hand with his remodeling efforts. "You don't have to look so happy about it," I scowled, and brought him inside for the night.